Gopi Dana Balaba Yirvanadari Gopi Dana Balaba Yirvanadari Kasoda na na na, brada dana randa na. Kasoda na na na, brada dana randa na. Kamuna dira anacharya. Jamuna Tira Anacharya Jayo Radha Madhava Kunjabhyare Jayo Radha Madhava Jaya Gopi Dana Balaba Yirvanadari Jaya Gopi Dana Balaba Yirvanadari Kasoda na na na, brada dana randa na. Kasoda na na na, brada dana randa na. Jamuna tira anacharya. Jamuna Tira Anacharya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabhyarya Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Gopi Dana Balaba Yirvanadari Jaya Gopi Dana Balaba Yirvanadari Kasoda na na na, brada dana randa na. Y Yes, oh, da na na na, raja da na ra da na. Damuna diha vanachare. Damuna diha vanachare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Parvidakacharya Asatara Sagushi Shriman, His Divine Grace Shalesi Bhakti Vedanta Swamiraj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premanande Hari. All glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga, and Ma Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Prasadavide Srimade Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Bacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasakatya Deva Sudana. Om Agyanatvanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Ayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakam Svitamscha. Hey Krishna Karnasindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Brindavaneshri Prishubhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Turubhyascha Kripa Sinubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pravinitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 23. Demigods regain the heavenly planets. I'll read the summary. This chapter describes how Bali Maharaj, along with his grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, entered the planet Sutala, and how the Supreme Personality of Godhead allowed Indra to re-enter the heavenly planet. The great soul Bali Maharaj experienced that the highest gain in life is to obtain devotional service under the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet in full surrender. Being fixed in this conclusion, his heart full of ecstatic devotion and his eyes full of tears, he offered obeisances to the Personality of Godhead and then with his associates entered the planet known as Sutala. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead satisfied the desire of Aditi and reinstalled Lord Indra, Prahlad Maharaj, being aware of Bali's release from arrest, then described the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this material world. Prahlad Maharaj praised the Supreme Lord for creating the material world, for being equal to everyone, and for being extremely liberal to the devotees, just like a desire tree. Indeed, Prahlad Maharaj said, that the Lord is kind not only to his devotees, but also to the demons. In this way, he described the unlimited causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, with folded hands, he offered his respectful obeisances unto the Lord, and after circumambulating the Lord, he also entered the planet Sutala in accordance with the Lord's order. The Lord then ordered Sukracharya to describe Bali Maharaj's faults and discrepancies in executing the sacrificial ceremony. Sukracharya became free from fruitive actions by chanting the holy name of the Lord, and he explained how chanting can diminish all the faults of the conditioned soul. He then completed Bali Maharaj's sacrificial ceremony. All the great saintly persons accepted Lord Vamanadeva as the benefactor of Lord Indra because he had returned Indra to his heavenly planet. They accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the maintainer of the affairs of the universe. Being very happy, Indra, along with his associates, placed Vamanadeva before him and re-entered the heavenly planet in their airplane. Having seen the wonderful activities of Lord Vishnu and the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, all the demigods, saintly persons, pittas, bhutas, and siddhas glorify the Lord again and again. The chapter concludes by saying that the most auspicious function of the conditioned soul is to chant and hear about the glorious activities of Lord Vishnu. Text 1. Shri Shukuvacha it yukva vantam purusham parataram pratanam Mahanubhavo kila sadhu samataha badanjaler pashpa bashpa kalanuklekshano bakyukalo gadgadaya gira bhavit. Shukadeva Goswami said, when the supreme ancient eternal personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, who was universally accepted as a pure devotee of the Lord and therefore a great soul, Bali Maharaj, his eyes filled with tears, his hands folded, and his voice faltering in devotional ecstasy, responded as follows. Shri Bali Ruvacha, Aho Pranamaya, Pranamaya, Kritaha, Samudyamana, or Samudyama, Prapana Bhaktarata Samahita Lokapalai Twat Anugraha Amarai Alabda Purva Apasade Asure Arpita. Shri Bali Ruvacha, Aho Pranamaya Krita Samudyama, Samudyama, Prapana Bhaktarata Vidau Samahita, Yaloka Palaistwat Anugraho Marair, Alabda Purva Pasade Sure Surerpita Shri Bali Ruvacha Aho Pramana Aho Pranamaya Kritak Samudyama Prapana Bhaktarata Vidosamahita Yalokapalais Twat Anugraho Marayar Alabda Purva Pasade Sure Prita. Shri Bali Uvacha. Bali Maharaj said, Aho, alas, Pranamaya, to offer my respectful obeisances. Kritaha, I did. Samudyama, only an endeavor. Prapana Bhakta Artha Vidao, and the regular principles observed by pure devotees. Samahita, is capable. yat that lokapalai by the leaders of various planets. Tvat anugraha, your causeless mercy. Amarai by the demigods. Alabdapurva, not achieved previously. Apasade, unto a fallen person like me. Asure, belonging to the Asura community. Arpita, endowed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami and Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless, the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. Purport. When Vamanadeva appeared before Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj immediately wanted to offer him respectful obeisances. But he was unable to do so because of the presence of Shukracharya and other demoniac associates. The Lord is so merciful, however, that although Bali Maharaj did not actually offer obeisances, but endeavored to do so within his mind, the Supreme Personality of Godhead blessed him with more mercy than even the demigods could ever expect. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 2.40, Swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato vayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana because he takes only the essence of a devotee's attitude. If a devotee sincerely surrenders, the Lord is the super soul in everyone's heart, immediately understands this. Thus, even though externally a devotee may not render full service, if he is internally sincere and serious, the Lord welcomes his service nonetheless. Thus, the Lord is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana because he takes the essence of one's devotional mentality. Shri Balir Uvacha Aho Pranamaya Kritak Samudyama Prapana Bhaktarata Vido Samahita Yalokapalais Tvat Anugraho Marar Alabda Purva Pasade Sure Prita. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthai Bhutai Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhaname Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarne. Here it says Krishna is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana, that he accepts the sentiment of the devotee. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Bhakti Amam Avijananti Yavanyas Chasmi Tatvataha Tato Amam Tatvato Gyatva Vishite Tar Anantara. That one can understand me, Krishna says, only by bhakti or devotion. And when one is fully conscious of me by such devotion, then he can enter into the kingdom of God. In other words, one becomes conscious of Krishna by rendering devotional service to Krishna, and when Krishna appreciates the sincerity of such devotion, he gradually reveals himself to the devotee. But that sentiment also must be something practical. According to the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, that the living entity is not actually doing anything in the material world. As it says, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha Ahankara Iti Vimudatma Kartaham Iti Manyate. That the living entity in the material world thinks himself to be the doer of the activities,
which are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. Although we may not be doing anything, but we are one of the five factors in the accomplishment of work. And Krishna designates the five factors as the body, because without a body we can't do anything. Gross and subtle body. And also the senses. We may have a body, but unless the senses function within the body, we can't do anything either. There are five active senses and five knowledge-acquiring senses, and they must be functional in order for the body to be useful. And then there is the endeavor, if there's nothing to do, if you were in a prison, and there's nothing in the prison, there's nothing to look at, it's all black, then you wouldn't have any work to do. You couldn't accomplish anything, at least not externally, maybe within your mind, but there would be nothing to do. So in order to do something, you also have to have something to do. Then the fourth factor is the soul, because although you may have a very nice body, there may be a body with full senses, you may have a lot to do, you may have a whole agenda written up, but if there's no soul in the body, nothing will happen. There's a dead body, you can't do anything. And the fifth factor is the super soul, because the soul, as we'll find out, that the soul is not actually entangled, nor is he doing anything. Nanyan gunevyas kartaram drasteva nupashati gunevyas chaparam veti madbhavam sodigashati. When you see that there's nothing beyond the three modes of material nature and all activities, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to them, then you can know my spiritual nature. At the end of the anadi bhat gunani bhat paramatmayam aviyam shariras topi kundeya nakaroti nana vidyate. Those who can see with the eyes of eternality can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. So factually, our only business in this body is desiring. So that desire is most significant, because it's by the desire that we had to come to the material world and become a separate Lord from Krishna, a separate enjoyer from Krishna, that Krishna created the material world and we're here now. So we don't have to feel in fear or bad about the fact that we can't do anything here except to desire, because desire here is all important. And by that desire, by cultivating the proper desire, we can go back to the spiritual world. And by cultivating a certain desire, we can remain in the material world in any place in the universe we want to. But we are simply the passenger in this car, and Krishna is the driver. So our desires are not independent. In other words, unless Krishna fulfills our desire, that desire cannot be fulfilled. Krishna is the one who orders the material energy to arrange itself in a certain way so that our desire can be fulfilled. If Krishna doesn't desire, then nothing will be there. And if Krishna desires, then everything will be there. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says that it is not sufficient to have a nice boat. Because even you may have the best boat, but if Krishna decides that the boat should sink, then it'll sink. You may have the best medicine, and the best doctor, but if Krishna decides that you die, then you die. You may have the nicest parents, they may watch over you very carefully, but if Krishna doesn't desire, then the child will not survive. So the final sanctioner, the final say in everything is Krishna. And no one can force Krishna to do anything. It is not that we can storm the gates of Vaikuntha, arrest Krishna, threaten him. Unless you made a mistake, you better repent. Krishna is not like that. He's the supreme independent controller, and no one can force him to do anything. Itasya karyam karanam cha vidite. Itasya karyam karanam cha vidite. Itaksamas chab yadikas chudrishyate. Parashya shaktir vividaivish kriyate. Svabhavaki jnana bhala kriyacha. That the Supreme Lord he actually has nothing to do. It is not that he created the material world because he wanted to torture someone. He wasn't bored in Vaikuntha because everything was so nice and everyone loved him. He decided to create a material world and kick around the souls here for a while. Try that taste. Sometimes that's inferred that God, he created a world where everyone here is conditioned eternally, and his pastime is just kicking the conditioned souls around. But God is not like that. He's a supreme, merciful, compassionate personality. He didn't create a world just to torture living entities. But no one can force Krishna, natasya karyam karyam to vijate. He has nothing to do, but in the spiritual world, here in the material world, he has nothing to do. He has nothing to gain or lose, but in the spiritual world, he's engaged in unlimited transcendental pastimes full of loving ecstasy. And tatsamascha vyadikascha jishate, no one can be equal to or greater than Krishna. That Krishna has all opulences, he has all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all wealth, all fame, all renunciation, and he has no competitor. He's not afraid that someone's going to study real hard in the material world, go to beauty class and learn from so many models, and one day someone's going to wind up more beautiful than he is. Or that someone's going to study all the Vedas, memorize them, and one day know more than Krishna does. Someone's going to expand himself and enter into all the atoms and figure out what's going on everywhere for all time. Therefore, Krishna is only going to have half an atom to live in. Krishna is not at all thinking like that. Parasya shakti rividaiva shuyate, he already has unlimited energies, sabhavaki gyanabala kriyacha, and they're already acting according to his desire as a natural sequence. Just like the mundane scientist, what is his endeavor? He's trying to imitate Krishna. He claims he's going to create life. Although Krishna is creating unlimited life all over the universe and all over all the universes, still the foolish scientist is claiming one day I'm going to create a blade of grass. So that's his sentiment. He's imitating Krishna. He's competing against Krishna. But even he created one blade of grass, which he can't do anyhow. It's too complicated for him. Even half a blade of grass. Even if he did it, what is his credit? Krishna is so great that he's created unlimited blades of grass. And he knows each one of them personally. He knows their names. He knows their family. He knows their ancestors. He knows where they came from. He knows everything. He knows what they like to eat. He knows everything about every blade of grass. Therefore, the sentiment that we're going to become the controller and enjoyer here is a false sentiment, but that is the sentiment of material existence, and we've come here with that sentiment. Vayadvitija vineshitasyat isharabhitasya viparyosmriti. That the living entities come here because he wants to compete against Krishna. So that's his desire. And on the basis of that desire, he's desiring in so many illusory ways that he's become attached to so many desires. We're not so powerful that we're even independently creating our desires. But according to our past activities and our past desires, we have this body. This 1949 model or the 1969 model, whatever model we have. And we're riding around in this machine. And the machine also is full of desires that arise within the mind. And we're becoming attached to the desire. And when we become attached to the desire, Krishna knows that. You can't hide it from Krishna. That Krishna, I'm sure he didn't see it, but I'm playing around in my mind right now. I hope he's not looking. Maybe the super soul took a break. He's out to lunch and now I can mess around with the machine for a while. But it's not like that. Krishna knows that exactly what we're attached to, and because we become attached to some desire, he may manifest that desire in the future, in some future time. Especially when the desire is manifested in this age, when it's manifested as activities. When we think no one's looking, we put our hand in the cookie pot. Krishna is there, recording the whole thing, writing down which cookie we took, how many bites we took, who the cookie actually belonged to. Everything's being recorded. But on the other hand, if the devotee, he has some desire to serve Krishna, and even if he's unable to do so, then Krishna will accept that desire. Here it says in the 14th chapter of the Nectar of Devotion that some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional service. But actually, that is not a fact. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected. For devotional service is dependent on nothing more than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity. But this, someone may say that this knowledge means impersonal knowledge, but that's not what it means. Knowledge means to know the difference between matter and spirit. And renunciation means to renounce the material conception of life. So in the beginning, to understand that we're not this body, and to cultivate knowledge about that, that is favorable. It may be favorable. And to renounce the material concept of life, the idea that we're the enjoyer and controller there, is also favorable. But it ultimately won't help one in devotional service, because devotional service depends upon the sincerity of the desire to serve Krishna. Without that, we may be complete knowledge that I'm not this body. We may even renounce everything material. But unless we want to serve Krishna, nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya uchate, unless we want to utilize this world in the service of Krishna, we've just wasted our time. So it requires nothing more than sincerity. So how is someone sincere? As I mentioned yesterday in the class, I had mentioned in someone's class that devotional service depends upon nothing more than sincerity, because that particular person was emphasizing something else. So one lady came up to me afterwards and said, how do we know anyone, how do we know if anyone's sincere in our society? So I said, you can tell if someone's sincere if they follow the instructions coming down from disciplic succession. So she said, how can I see if anyone's following? I don't really believe if anyone's following. So I said, well, here's a godbrother of mine. He's been, engaged in devotional service for the last 25 years or so. So he must be sincere. Not that actually I've been saving up my 25 years because actually I want to find out who this Krishna is so I could take over his kingdom. It's ridiculous. I'm going through all these austerities because my real aim is just sense gratification. It makes no sense whatsoever. So one can judge if someone's sincere, mostly if he follows the instructions, or if he's trying to follow instructions, coming down through the disciplic succession. Everyone in the material world thinks they're sincere, but that sincerity has to be judged by what we're doing. But if one is trying at least to engage in the activities of devotional service, chanting his rounds every day, trying to follow the four legal principles, coming to class, trying to understand this philosophy, then Krishna thinks he's sincere. And Krishna is the ultimate person who has to judge whether we're sincere or not. Whether your teacher gives you a gold star or not, it doesn't really matter. It matters or not whether or not Krishna appreciates what we're doing. And how does Krishna appreciate? He says, Tesham Sadatam Yuktanam Vajantam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yenamam Upayanti Te. Krishna judges something by how much we're engaged. We don't take any coffee breaks, we don't take any breaks from devotional service. If we're steadily engaged, then Krishna appreciates that. And how much we're enthusiastic. Not that we feel bad that there are four regular principles and we wish there are only three. You know, no meat, fish, and eggs. But somehow or another, there's four. Maybe there should only be three and a half or something. And maybe we've been given some service and we think, well, I didn't really want to do this. I didn't join this movement to do this service. Why are they, you know, this is not... In other words, the less reluctant we are, the less hesitating we are, the more we're willing to execute all kinds of services, then the more Krishna becomes satisfied. Enthusiasm. Even we may not be so much enamored by the particular service we're doing, but if we're enthusiastic to please Krishna, then that's what Krishna appreciates. So it's not the service so much, it's our enthusiasm to please Krishna and his representatives. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that there are different levels of devotional service, that when one is attached to, when one knows that the goal is Krishna, but he's addicted to he's addicted to the fruits of his activity. Don't put your hand in your mouth, your finger in your mouth. Then he's said to be acting in karma yoga. And when he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculation to try and understand Krishna, then he's said to be acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows that the goal is Krishna and he seeks Krishna completely in full Krishna consciousness, then he's said to be acting in bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga, a full use of our intelligence, is called buddhi yoga. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport that a devotee may have a bona fide spiritual master and he may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he's not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within his heart, he helps him. In other words, it is not simply our power to discriminate. It is not simply our power to be detached. It is not simply anything but our sincere desire to try to please Krishna, that Krishna appreciates. There are many scholars that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not impressed by their scholarship. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great scholar. He even taught many sannyasis. He was a disciple of or a direct representative of Brihaspati. But still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not at all impressed by his scholarship because it lacked devotion. Similarly, Prakashananda Saraswati and others, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not appreciate at all their philosophy because it was lacking devotion. Therefore, it says that the only real qualification is that one should be willing to render all kinds of service, and it should be done with love. Then Krishna helps him or gives him a chance to make progress in devotional service. And what is the real criteria? Tesham eva nukam bharata mahama jnana jam tamaha na shamyam yatma bhavishto jnana dipena bhashvataha. Out of compassion for them, I dwell in the heart, destroy with the lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So does that mean that one should not discriminate? Or one should not try to get out of the modes of ignorance and passion? No, it doesn't mean that, because if one wants to understand things properly, what is that proper? That all we do is have to please Krishna, that's all. But that can only be understood in the mode of at least goodness or transcendental goodness. That one should have no goal in life save and except to act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. No one can possibly realize that unless he's at least in the mode of goodness. So anyone can understand that, then he must be at least be somewhat in the mode of goodness to understand that there's no real goal in life except to act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna, and that one should follow Krishna's instructions. So that's what transcendental goodness means, which is above goodness. So anyone who becomes fixed in that understanding, he's transcended the modes of nature. So getting to the mode of goodness does not mean to analyze everything. It means to actually, the best way, the quickest way to get to that mode is by taking shelter of devotional service. In the 18th chapter, for instance, Krishna goes over everything about the three modes of material nature. But then at the end he says everyone in this material world is under the three modes. So Krishna is not writing a book to describe the three modes of material nature, or simply to describe how everyone is conditioned in the material world, because then he gets into the real business where he explains that one should transcend the three modes by taking to devotional service. So that's the real essence, is becoming convinced about the power of devotional service, becoming convinced about the chanting of the holy name, for instance. If we just can cry out once with real sincerity, "Hey Govinda," then we can actually capture Krishna. Become convinced about that. Or as Krishna says, "Janma karma chamehi divyam evam yoveti tatvataha dhyakvadeham punarajama naiti mameti sa arjuna." That one can go back to the spiritual world if one simply understands Krishna's birth and activities in truth. And how is that possible? By devotion. In other words, if with devotion one can understand or accept that Krishna is my Lord, as soon as one accepts that, then immediately Krishna reciprocates fully, and one has transcended all the modes of material nature and has come to the platform of full Krishna consciousness. Therefore, that sincerity to understand Krishna and the willingness to follow the path by which one could understand Krishna, that's called Krishna consciousness. And although other things may be accepted, discrimination or activities, whatever else, they're accepted only so much as they help us come to that platform of sincerely trying to understand Krishna and render loving service to Him. I think I'll stop there. Are there any questions? Well, there's different types of living entities. Krishna says, "Na cha etani karmani nibandanti dananjaya udasinadvarasinam asaktam teshu karmasu." He said, I am ever detached, Sudha is no, as though neutral. He said, there's no work that affects me, nor am I entangled by the results of people's work in one place. In that particular verse, he says, all this work cannot affect me. He's talking about the creation, annihilation of the material world, according to the desires of living entities. Because I'm ever detached, so it is though neutral. I'm not attached to people's work. So Krishna is like the judge in the material world. He knows exactly what people deserve, and he awards it accordingly. But for the devotee, he takes special interest, and sometimes the devotee may desire something, and he may even deserve it. But if Krishna doesn't think it's beneficial for him, then he doesn't award it. So Krishna takes special interest for the devotees. Just like the king, he guards all the citizens. He protects all of them. But he has special interest in his own family members. Well, the soul, he's simply attached to desires. He's not manifesting the desires. He's simply manifesting the attachment for them. The desires are the soul. Factually, what does he have to do with the material world? What is there to desire here? What the soul really wants is an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. But he's mistakenly thinking that he can find it in the material world. Therefore, he becomes attached to different desires that offer this idea that if this desire is fulfilled, then you'll find eternal bliss and knowledge here. So there's nothing but frustration in the material world for the soul, because whatever he does, he never finds eternal bliss and knowledge. So there's no question of whether he becomes frustrated. That's his whole existence here, is frustration. Once in a while he gets the body of a demigod, and he thinks, I've made it. I've gotten eternal bliss and knowledge. But then, very shortly in the life of a demigod, he realizes that I'm going to die. It's not exactly, I didn't get the real thing yet. And even in these subterranean heavenly planets, where they don't know when death is coming, still they're fearful of the Sudarshan chakra. So fear is mixed into everyone's life here. Yeah, we have to find out about Krishna. Unless we know about Krishna and actually get some reciprocation with him by experience, and how we know that the goal is to please Krishna. Someone may tell us that, but if we don't know Krishna, then how will we develop it? Just like someone may tell someone, there's a very beautiful girl. Once in a while he gets the body of a demigod and he thinks, I've made it. I've gotten eternal bliss and knowledge. But then, very shortly in the life of a demigod, he realizes that I'm going to die. It's not exactly, I didn't get the real thing yet. And even in these subterranean heavenly planets, where they don't know when death is coming, still they're fearful of the Sudarshan chakra. So fear is mixed into everyone's life here. Yeah, we have to find out about Krishna. Unless we know about Krishna and actually get some reciprocation with him by experience, and how we know that the goal is to please Krishna. Someone may tell us that, but if we don't know Krishna, then how will we develop it? Just like someone may tell someone, there's a very beautiful girl, I'm sure you'll love her. You say, well, maybe I should make my goal in life to love this girl. But if you don't even know her, then, you know, how are you going to actually be serious about it? You have to get to know her. You have to find out whether you want to get to know her, and then you have to render some service. Prabhupada gives the example that in India, sometimes the ladies, they're married when they're 7 years old. So they don't immediately go and live with their husband, but every day they bring some food or something that's prepared by their mother. This way they offer it to their husband, and then gradually a relationship develops. So by hearing and then by practicing, gradually a relationship with Krishna will develop. I mean, we heard he's a nice person, but we have to find out for ourselves. And when we find out for ourselves, then a relationship will be there. Huh, sounds pretty gory. It's probably not the most important part of our philosophy. Probably makes some rakshasas feel a little good. We finally get even with those guys. Yeah, I mean, in any case, even if you don't get eaten up by the rakshasas, according to, at least in the Bhagavad Gita, it says you come down as rain and you're put into grain. So you're baked into bread. Anyhow, the purport is you don't stay there forever. All right, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.